tall, handsome greeter every Sunday with 30-something years of sobriety. Charlie, come on up.
Charlie.
Okay, my name is Charlie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Charlie.
And I really love this program. I want to start out with that before I make any mistakes. You know, it's just this program's given me an opportunity to live. I really had I was in the same situation. I didn't have a clue of how to live because when you're a kid, you're not in charge of your life. Other people are in charge of it. If they don't know how to live, then you have that problem going on. I was born in a little town, Fargo, Oklahoma. Probably somebody knows where that is, but it's the home of Will Rogers. He's a real famous diplomat we had. And it's a little bitty town, and I'm telling you, I don't think things could have been better for me. I mean, I lived on 9th Street, and we rolled tires, and we had the Walker clan had a kind of like a barricade. We had pit bulls, so we could have had to fence it off so they wouldn't bite people. And I don't know what that was about, why we had the pit bulls. But we had a couple of horses and some pigs and some other stuff. That's my grandmother's stuff. And that's where I lived most of my first 5-6 years. And we had a little, and then finally my mother moved out with my father, who was in the military. Who I didn't see very often at all. He got in the Army, he got away from that little town, and he said, I'm gone. And he stayed gone. And that was a big deal in our family, was trying to figure out if he was going to come back or if she was going to go where he was at. Oh, that was their deal. My deal was I was having a good time being a kid. And, there was all kinds of people that lived there. There was Indian families, there was white families, there was black families. And I was a kid and I was rolling tires and shooting marbles and having a good time. And then my mother decided that she was going to move to Kansas because Kansas had announced that they were going to start integrating in a couple of years or the next year or something. I wasn't into the politics of life at that time. So we moved to Kansas. And still, life was pretty good. I was a kid. I was rolling tires, shooting marbles. And there's one negative about my childhood. I had 5 sisters. And if you think you can run something with 5 sisters, you can forget it. They ran that entire household. And the older I got, the more they said, outside. Get outside, get outside. So, okay. So they ran the house and I stayed in the yard. And for the first couple of years we were in Kansas, we went to a school there. And it was all black school. And it was a long ways from our house. It was like 4 or 5 miles. We had to go every morning to go to school. And my mother insisted on you going to school. And I don't know why, because she never checked my homework or anything. But in the first and second grade, you don't have much. But she never checked it because my mother was completely tired from it. She cleaned houses and did all that kind of stuff. And she was always pooped out and she never checked me out. I was a little jealous of my sisters because she would actually check their work. I said, damn. I know I don't know nothing, and why ain't you working on me, you know? Why don't you help me out? Give me a break here. And pretty soon I got over that and said, well, I don't have to do anything. So that's cool. It all flipped in the third grade. They said, okay, you guys are integrated. Everybody was happy but the kids. I didn't have to go the 4 miles of school. I only had to go 10 blocks. It was a nice, beautiful school, but everybody wanted to pick on me. I was just a little fat kid, and I didn't know why everybody was picking on me, you know? And so my sister told me, said, you know what, you better not come home whining no more. You not letting boys beat you up anymore, because if you do, you're really going to get it. And you guys don't know Nadine, but Nadine meant that. She's pretty tough. She's still alive down there in the Victoria right now. I don't mess with her still today. So I had to kind of toughen up and be a tough little third grader, you know. So it took about a year and a half before people accepted me as who the hell I was. I didn't know who I was, but it took a while until they accepted me to who I was. And then later on, I figured out, God dang, I'm special, man. I'm the only black kid in this whole damn school. You know, I mean, there was girls, but they didn't count. Let's talk about the guys, you know. I said, man, I'm kind of special, so this is really good. So I've told some of my friends here that I just staked a claim on the ball diamond. You know, I said, I didn't know much about reading and writing and arithmetic or being literate. I didn't know much about that, but I sure did like to play ball. So I'd go out there and I'd get that bat, that ball, and say, I'm picking you and you and you. So being king of the ball diamond, if you're a guy, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That's about the highest you can get in school, is being captain of everything, you know. So since I'm a little bigger and fatter than most of those guys, I was the captain of that team and that team and that team. So I had fun at Horseman, grade school. So my life kept going on. There's always some problems because some people just will not accept the fact that you're in the world, you know, and they just want to give you a hard time. Well, once I found out what all that stuff was about, I gave them a hard time also. And so that causes a problem. Pretty soon I got out of there, and what was missed in my family besides my father was that we didn't have any money. And so the guy told me, I got a paper route, Charlie. I said, what? He said, yeah, I got a paper route, and I make $6 a week. Oh, my interest is way up there. So I said, well, how do you do that? He said, well, you got a bicycle now. Come with me in the morning, and I'll show you how to throw papers. So that's what happened. I went with Billy, and I think Billy was scared. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. Hell, I was scared, too. We went, we threw those papers, you know, and it was Route 2. And there was only 46 and 47. He only made 4.50 and something like that a week. But I said, hell, that was good. That was really good for me because my mom never had any money. She was always broke. The money that my father sent, everybody knows this is military accounts. Everybody knows about the GIs sending their money to their mother. She used that to pay for the house. We had a small little house that was hers. She was really proud of that. And she owned that house. And so she spent that money on the house and worked all day long to take care of us and told me that you're a man, you're going to be a man, you need to have some money. So I got a job. That messes up with my little sports thing, you know. So I can only play certain times of the year because, you know, I got to carry papers. Once I got a job and start getting money, I was not interested in anything else. And that's the fact. Once I got a little job, even though it was a small amount of money, I said, this is what I'm supposed to be doing anyway. It's earning money and putting it in my pocket. My mom's always broke. And it sounds like I was really being a good guy. But I don't think I was thinking about her as much as I was thinking about me. I was thinking, I got this money that I can eat donuts and do this and do that. And that was really on my mind. I could get a Frito Pie, junior high. You know what I mean. I mean, all of you have wanted to get a Frito Pie at junior high and a root beer, you know. And so I had this paper route, so I could do all those things. And, man, I felt just really comfortable. And the other little things that went on, like if I would decide that I wanted lunch and this one kid that was a good friend of mine, actually, his family had a lot of money, I'd say, give me $2. And he'd say, Charlie, I only got $3. I said, well, give me $1.50. I didn't realize I was actually being a robber. You know, I was stealing from this poor guy, and I was about twice his size. And Finally, his dad came to school. I can tell this story because it's really true. I see this guy all dressed up at the bike rack. And I said, oh, no, man, what's he doing here? And I came up there with my bike. He said, are you Charlie? I said, yeah. He said, you know, my son is Bob, and he's a friend of yours, and you've been taking this money that we give him every morning. I said, not every day. And he said, I understand. He said, I understand it's kind of tough on you and things like that, but you can't do that. You have to stop doing that. And if he's really your friend, you don't want to do that. You stop. He didn't threaten me with the police or nothing. He just told me just stop messing with his son. And so I did. I stopped robbing him. Anyway, I got through junior high and without too many incidents. There's this kid named Raymond Ed, so I don't want to bring him up too much because he was really a pain. You know, his father liked me because I played on his little baseball team, so Raymond really disliked me because his father liked me. And so he said, I'm going to get you, Charlie. I said, Raymond, I can't really beat you up because your father's the coach. So you need to leave me alone or I'm going to have to beat you up anyway. So he said, I don't care. We're going to have to go after it together. My dad doesn't know you like I do. Well, his dad didn't know me like Raymond knew me because me and Raymond used to run around the gym bothering other people. So, I mean, that's just the way school was. So what I'm trying to tell you without taking a lot of time is as far as I'm concerned, I had a good childhood. It was pretty good, even though there's lots of challenges for a kid, you know, growing up without a father, growing up with a mother working her butt off all the time, and the guidance wasn't there. We get that word when we get here, you know, we get some guidance. And so I went through that phase of my development, and you couldn't have told me I wasn't having a good time. I was having a good time. I really liked all the traditions. When I went to high school, they threw me down the hill because I wasn't smart. I didn't act right all the time, so I wouldn't listen. I'll put it that just like that. I wouldn't listen because I said I'm free. You can't tell me a bunch of crap. So they threw me down the hill, and some big guy who ended up being the mayor of the town helped me out and said, "Leave him alone." He was a senior, by the way. He was actually acting like a senior should act. You know, he was taking care of the younger people in the school. And he was one of the people that was on the committees and stuff in school. And he ended up being the mayor of the town. But the thing about it was a good place for me to grow up. I grew up there. I played a lot of ball when I wasn't busy carrying papers, trying to have money. No alcohol. I wasn't smoking and drinking. To me, was just like, that is so sick. Why should I do that? Why would I want to smoke or drink? I didn't want to do that. I wanted to stay away from that. I saw what abuse did. I didn't call it abuse. I just called it being a drunk. I saw what it did. I didn't want to be there. My uncle drank a lot, and my mother didn't want him around the house. So I kind of know what that is. And he went to jail a lot, too, because he liked to take people's money. Like when I was a kid taking that other guy's money. So, yeah, he went to jail a lot. Uncle Clem, I liked him, but we were told not to be too associated with him because he was a criminal. You know, so I didn't want to be a criminal. I wanted to be a good guy. So I had to change from taking lunch money. So I had to carry papers. I had to throw those papers. There weren't very many jobs, by the way. I looked all over for better jobs and couldn't find any. So there wasn't very many jobs in Pittsburgh, Kansas for me back in the 40s and the 50s. Okay. Now, what happened was, to get me up to some, that was what was happening. And my mom, my poor mom, she finally got herself up. They got a divorce. My dad and my mom got a divorce. And she got a boyfriend, and she flipped completely out. That's the best way I could put it. She just went, boom! And then the guy, he was going to college down there, little college town. he was he kept finishing furniture, something like that. She flips out over this guy, and she follows him all the way back home to Wichita, and just abandoned him when I was about 15. Just took off. He said, "Where's Mom?" My sister said, "I don't know." And somebody said, "I heard she's following Mr. Newby all the way back to Wichita." So anyway, she just flipped out and she just took off. So everybody kind of didn't know what to do. I'm 14 years old. So we had had some friends that had moved to Wichita. So I got a hold of them and I got a ride and I went to Wichita. So I considered myself, I'm running away. I'm running away from the situation. But I got sisters down there. They got nobody. They got nothing going on. So they're staying at the house. And finally, she contacts Ben and told him something. I don't know exactly what, but anyway, she sent him some money or whatever. And when all this flipping out got settled, we were living in Tulsa. But I wasn't in Tulsa. I was in Wichita with some friends of mine. And there's no alcohol in there, guys, because there was people drinking, but I didn't drink. And they're smoking, but I didn't smoke. And I just wouldn't do it. In Wichita, I went to the basketball court a lot. That's what they did up in Wichita. They played a little baseball, but they mostly played basketball all day long. So I did that, and then finally God got in the picture. You know, I didn't know it was God then. But my cousin, kind of cousin by choice, said, "Let's go caddy. We can make a living caddying up here." So I said, "Okay." Every day I'd go out there and I'd never get out. I was considered a sea caddy. I'd never get out. So they had a big old tournament. All the A's and the B caddies, man, they were out there carrying them bags. And a guy comes drifting in there late. Charlie comes in there late. And I didn't know he was the lieutenant governor of the state. And he said, "I need a caddy." And they said, "Well, we don't have any caddies." I was sitting right there. And he says, can you carry bags, son?" And I said, "Sure." He said, "Well, he can be my caddy. Come on." So I grabbed the bag. He said, "Now you're supposed to follow that ball." I said, "I can do that." He asked a lot of questions I didn't know anything about. But I could find the ball and I could carry the bag. That's what he needed. I didn't know he was a damn good golfer. Hell, he won the tournament. So, he had asked me a lot of questions about myself. I told him kind of what was going on with me. He said, "You know, you need to go back home. You need to get with your mom, even though she did flip out. You know, she's back in Tulsa now, and you need to go back home to your family." I didn't know I was going to tell this part this morning, but I said, "Okay." So he gave me $50. Now, I don't know if you guys know how much $50 is in 1956 or 7 or whatever that it was, or whatever it was, but that's a lot of money. I mean, I got a bus ticket, some new jeans, a whole bunch of stuff. And I went down to Tulsa and checked in with my mom, and she had settled down, and she was mom again, and, you know, everything was going on. But I didn't like Tulsa. I'm just going to tell you right now, I didn't like Tulsa. It was too big, and you had to cross the tracks from one gang to another gang. And the high school was I wasn't famous anymore. I wasn't a big shot. I played on a basketball team, and I did a few things with Tulsa, but I didn't like it. So my buddy had joined the Army, was getting ready to join the Army, somebody I knew down there. And he said, "I'm joining the Army." And I said, "Well, when I get 18, I'm joining." And I didn't have to wait. Somebody said, "You can join when you're 17 if you get your mom to sign for you." Now, we're starting to get to the point where my life changed. And so I was downtown one day. I went into the Air Force. They said, no degree, no high school diploma, no Air Force. I went to the Marine Corps, this guy got up. That was the biggest Indian I ever seen in my life. he said, I don't think you want to come in here. I said, okay. So I went down the street, and those guys all worked together. So they had called down the street, and the guy in the army was kind of waiting for me when I got to the corner, you know. And he said, hey, what are you doing down here today? And I said, well, I was going to go in the Air Force, and I was going to go in the Marine Corps. And he said, well, I don't know why you waited too long. Come on in, let's take a screen test. So I went in there, and we took the screen test, and I think I surprised him because I passed the screen test pretty good. And he said, whoa, when do you want to leave? And I said, I passed. He said, yeah, don't worry about that. He said, we just need your mother's signature right here. So I went home, and I told my mom, I said, you know, I can go in the Army if you sign. My mom wasn't that flipped out. She said, okay. Oh, my God. And she signed. I didn't wait 2 or 3 weeks or something because I didn't have nothing pending. You know, some people got a bunch of pending stuff, all this stuff. I didn't have none of that going on. I didn't like Tulsa. I did have a little girlfriend, yes. But I didn't have anything pending. I just wanted to get out of there and start my life. And so I joined the Army. And I was gone in a week. I took off. And that's where I get to meet you guys. I joined the Army, and when we would get off, we would go to the beer garden. And he said, buy you a carton of cigarettes over here, beer garden's over here, and this is over here. And so I just went and bought me a carton of cigarettes, went to the beer garden and started drinking beer. And I said, these little suckers, I got it made down. Yeah, I got that alcohol in me, and we buy Oreos and a package of Oreos and get all the beers on the table and start drinking, and then I started getting in trouble. I don't know. My attitude came back, and I would tell the sergeant no, and he'd have me out there running all night. But anyway, the alcohol started with the Army. And I drink little bitty drinks back in high school and stuff, but it wasn't nothing because I didn't want to drink. But once I got in the Army and I started drinking, my life changed completely. I was just a total character. And I started drinking, and I had one plan, and drinking would change that. I said, well, I'll go airborne. So I went down to Georgia, and an airborne guy told me, he said, fall out and start doing some push-ups. So I stopped, fell out, and I started doing those push-ups. And then he said, I can't hear you. So I tied my little shoe, and I ran up to him, and I said, can you hear me now? And he said, oh, I got a problem with you, buddy. He said, I got a problem with you. So that's the kind of problem I gave him. And he gave me quite a few problems. Anyway, I stayed in the Army 3 years, and I went, how can you complain about being stationed in Hawaii? You know, I was stationed in Hawaii for 3 years, and I was on the football team, and I was on the basketball team, and I just goofed off all the time. Of course, I was so dumb, I didn't know it was goofed off. You know, I didn't know I was having that good of a time, you know, but I just, because I was drinking. And I don't think I ever thought clear when I was drinking. And I just, I worked a half a day when I was in the Army. And then I practiced a half a day and go downtown. And I complained every single day about that little bitty island. I said, it's terrible. I don't like it. But if you don't go to the beach, if you don't go do something, you're going to have a terrible time. And so finally somebody said, Charlie, let me take you down to Waikiki. A couple of guys from New York took me down to Waikiki. And I said, oh, man, this is a beautiful island. This is nice. This is the way it's supposed to be. And so I started to learn how to live a little bit with these guys. And they weren't alcoholics. They would have one or two beers, that was it. But I wanted to keep drinking it. they even told me, they said, you know, you want to kind of slow down. Did it die? I got through that. Well, here's the thing I want to tell you that I'm stealing your time. I love this program. My first meeting was in Oakland, California. Those people treated me very, 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 very nice. They seemed to know what this disease was about. They grabbed a hold of me and they told me, we're going to love you too. You can love yourself. I thought that was a little bit crazy. But they told me that. They did do that. And everybody, even people that probably don't like me very much, in this program, has helped me. Every single one of you have helped me in this program. And I love this program. So if you guys are running out here because you got nothing else to do, you need to stick around because this program will save your butt. That's all I got.